everyone. Welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. We've got Tony back this week. Rick's here as well. Tony's in Panama, so we're going to have some exciting things to talk about there. But let's jump into the news this week. We've got just in, this was yesterday, China considers issuing up to 6 trillion yuan of bonds to fund aggressive economic stimulus. So money printer go burr. Is anyone surprised? What are your reactions to this, guys? Rick, you want to start?
Yeah, sure. I mean, just like a lot of countries in the world, China's economy is looking a little bit shaky, right? They've got high youth unemployment. They've got weak productivity. And also, quite famously, their real estate market is in a bit of trouble, right? These guys, they just went nuts, like building so many high-rise flats and huge skyscrapers. And you might have seen this already in the news over the past few years. Like, a lot of them just weren't getting finished, and some of them just got torn down before they were completed, and all this sort of stuff. And, you know, a lot of household wealth in China was flowing into real estate. They were buying like second homes, like off plan, like, you know, just the crazy sort of stuff, not dissimilar to what we saw in 2008 in the United States, right? So look, you know, that's causing all sorts of problems. Everybody's wealth is tied up in these properties that are losing value. Their wages are stagnating. You know, the productivity is down, and the Chinese government are thinking, uh-oh, what are we going to do here? And yeah, no prizes for guessing what the solution might be, right? What's the solution that all the governments always take is, oh, well, we better undergo a load of economic stimulus, aka print a ton of money. So, you know, what have they been doing? Well, they've already lowered their interest rates, and then they lowered their bank's reserve requirements because, hey, you know, yeah, lend out money that you don't even have. Who cares, right? And then because the real estate market is where the real big danger is, they started even issuing subsidies to state enterprises, allowing them to go and buy the properties that no one else is going to buy because they're not even getting finished, right? So it's like that scene in Wolf of Wall Street, right? It's all fugazi, you know, woozy wazzy, like just total nonsense. So, you know, look, big problems. And this wouldn't be the first time that China have tried to fire one of these giant stimulus bazookas, right? To try and prop up their economy. They did it in 2008. And then 7 years later, they did it again in 2015. And then 3 years later, they did it. Oh, no, sorry. 6 years later, they did it in 2015. And then 3 years later, they did it in 2021. So what's really fascinating about those numbers is, look, you know, the first time they did it, it took another 7 years before they pulled the trigger again. And then it took only another 6 years before they fired another financial bazooka. And then only another 3 years before they fired the next one. So, you know, look, this is kind of what's going to happen, right? They're going to keep getting more and more in trouble, and they're going to keep printing more and more money. They're going to keep bringing out these money printers. And this is in every nation, right? The US is going to do it. China's going to do it. The UK is going to do it. The EU is going to do it. So they're going to flood the system with even more money. So, you know, no prizes for guessing what I might propose as a solution. But that's obviously going to be getting some Bitcoin and opting out of this craziness into an asset that nobody can print, right? So, and if that wasn't enough, if you want to know if China are really quite desperate, they're also sort of trying to go around the world now and hunt down super wealthy Chinese people who have investments outside of the country and target them for more tax. So, yeah, same stuff we see everywhere, right? But the money printers are coming back.
Yeah, Tony.
Yeah, man, this is clown world on Broadway now. It's like almost hilarious to watch, you know, all these broken countries go broke publicly and make, you know, a spectacle of themselves. What did you expect? You know, none of these clowns have money. This is, you know, a broken system that's falling apart, and now they're all desperately, you know, scrambling to anything possible to remain relevant. So for sure they're going to print money, because what's the biggest sign of someone who has no clue what they're doing? You print money and you raise taxes, you know, certified idiots right there, which is a common theme, you know, across all governments that do that. And so who's going to pay the price? Well, it's the people, or at least the people that aren't paying attention and assume, well, you know, that's just how things are. But thankfully, you know, a lot more are, you know, awake these days and are focusing on alternative solutions, which thankfully are available. Actually, there's not much of a buffet, you know, available for us. There's only one. Bitcoin in self-custody. It's a no-brainer at that point. I mean, it couldn't be more clear to the world that if you do nothing, you are going to get completely decimated by your local currency, your government, no matter where you're living. There is no escaping this. There's no hiding from it. No matter, you know, how deep you stick your head down into the floor, you're gonna, when you bring it up, you're going to find a pack of hyenas behind you waiting to tear you apart. So the longer people wait, you know, to react on this, you know, the bigger the damage they inflict upon themselves. But China printing money is just one of many other countries that are going to follow suit in the very, very near future. Opt out, fiat is dead, fiat is broken, and fiat is for dummies. You're working for free when you're earning in fiat. Opt out, Bitcoin in self-custody, regain your dignity, regain your value. It's a no-brainer. It's a few new steps you have to learn. We can help you do this. We're really good at it. And if you don't want our help, there's plenty of resources online to do it, but do it.
It's crazy to me that, you know, we talk about like stimulating the economy, and it's like the answer is never incentivize businesses, lower taxes so they have more capital, cut red tape, like all of the obvious ways that you would think about actually, like if you step back and you didn't have a money printer, that's exactly what anyone would do thinking rationally. But the only solution now is, well, you just got to print. Like the only option is just flood with more fiat. And unfortunately, Tony, you're right. Like we all know where this goes, and you know better than most, but it's just crazy that people are still playing this charade. You know, like there's such easier answers that don't have longer term implications or negative longer term implications the way that printing money does. We've seen this this show plenty of times. So unfortunately, many people still have a lot to learn. Alrighty, up next, we're going to talk about Michael Saylor. He says that MicroStrategy's endgame is to be the leading Bitcoin bank and become a $1 trillion company. I'm sold that he's going to become a $1 trillion company. Tony, I'm curious to hear your opinion on his interest in becoming a Bitcoin bank.
I've always suspected this from a long time ago. I mean, for someone to be so aggressively buying all this Bitcoin, you know, I mean, how much do you need for one individual? There had to be, you know, some ulterior motive. And the only one I can think of is him planning on becoming some sort of bank in, you know, in the whole Bitcoin ecosystem. And it also, by the way, explains some of his latest comments on certain podcasts, you know, where he seems to stand by, you know, the old legacy ways of doing things, where, you know, lending for providing yield and all that stuff, which, you know, completely go against, you know, the whole Bitcoin ethos. So why is he still in support of that? Because, well, as he said himself, he doesn't believe in giving something out for nothing. If he's going to lend out his Bitcoin, he's going to expect something in return, you know, which is sort of still sort of extending the bad habits of, you know, the current system. Now, what kind of financial products he's going to offer, I have no idea, but he's probably going to end up competing with the likes of BlackRock and Fidelity, which are also aiming to do the same thing because that's where they are going to be making most of their money. Now, for sure, they're going to be limited with the type of games that they play because, you know, Bitcoin is a scarce asset. You can't manipulate it. You can't print it out of thin air. So how honest these games are, I mean, it's yet to be seen. But one thing's pretty certain, they have to be more honest than the broken fiat games that these guys are currently involved in. But yeah, I mean, Michael Saylor opening up a bank, no surprise whatsoever. Like I said, I've been suspecting this for a very long time. It only makes sense considering how much he's buying.
Yeah, so Saylor was on Saifedean's podcast a few weeks ago, a month ago, and they were talking about this. And they were talking past each other a bit, I think, on whether or not banks on a Bitcoin standard are good or bad. And Saifedean's point, I think, that Saylor missed a few times was it's not about whether or not it should be permitted or it's good or bad. I think it's going to become unprofitable. It's not going to be in the free market. It's going to lose. I'm curious to see if Saifedean is right. Philosophically, I think I'm with Saifedean on this, and you know, I mean, destroy the legacy system. But I could very well be wrong about that. Saifedean could be wrong, and maybe there is a place for banks because there are still so many people who don't get it, aren't going to want to hold their own keys. They want to trust someone else. Like, you know, they probably don't appreciate what scarcity means. Is that there's no insurance policy on this stuff. There's no money printer. There's no safety net that the government can throw up for people who, you know, mismanage their wealth. So it's an interesting concept, but unfortunately, I think he's jumping the gun here and playing sort of fiat games before we can uncover what the free market, you know, will do as they begin to understand Bitcoin.
Saylor seems to believe that human nature will not change. And so that's why he says what he says. And he's sort of like extending that lifeline of the fiat games using Bitcoin, you know, under the guise of, okay, it's going to be more honest though because it's Bitcoin. Whereas Saifedean's stand is that people will change if they're forced to change. Like, you can't change behavior if you still allow the same garbage, you know, that you're trying to walk away from. And so that's where, you know, the conflict in that argument came from, I think, from what I understood. But Saylor is so involved still in the fiat world, you know, that for him to just like throw that out might be a huge risk, even in his head, as big as a Bitcoin, you know, person he is, maybe subconsciously that still worries him. Whereas, you know, somebody like Saifedean doesn't really care about that. Like, he would rather see the whole fiat system and it's all its ways completely obliterated, gone to zero, and start fresh with a clean slate, because that's where, you know, we genuinely believe that humanity will upgrade and prosper because they're forced to apply new ways now.
Yeah. Yeah. Human nature may not change, but the incentives are going to be completely upended. Rick, what do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting one, isn't it? You know, I think Saylor's been a net positive for the Bitcoin space in general, right? Because, you know, a lot of people are taking notice of what he's done. I think what the way that he sort of leverages the current financial system against itself is really quite fascinating, right? Like, it's like a weird infinite money glitch that he's found. You know, he goes and buys a load of Bitcoin, the value of Bitcoin rises, that increases his share price dramatically because he's sitting on this big pile of wealth. Then he raises more debt off the back of that. Then he buys more Bitcoin, and then Bitcoin goes up, and then his shares are worth more, and now he can raise more debt. It's kind of a wild sort of thing that he's doing, and I can see why a lot of people are interested in, you know, MicroStrategy stock and all this sort of stuff, right? As for the Bitcoin Bank stuff, I mean, for me, it's not appealing in any sort of way, right? The reason I was interested in Bitcoin in the first place was the fact that I know that you cannot trust the banks. They've proven that countless times over the years, right? So when the white paper came out and Satoshi introduced Bitcoin, the idea was that you would reduce your counterparty risk to zero so that you didn't have to trust people anymore to look after your wealth, because history shows us that they will continually break that trust. So, you know, to almost, I think what's happening here is they're sort of almost like reframing what Bitcoin is, right? You'll notice this in a few circles, actually. So when you listen to like Larry Fink talk about Bitcoin, I think just this week he was comparing it to, you know, the size of the housing market as an asset class. And Michael Saylor will refer to it as an asset class, right? I think what they desperately don't want you to think is that it's money, right? Because if you view it as money and a way to transact with one another without any financial intermediary having to grant you permission, or having any oversight or any control over your payments, that is the biggest threat to the current financial system, right? So, you know, by constantly positioning this Bitcoin as an asset, what they're trying to do, I think, is maintain some level of control over it. Now, you know, we could debate till the cows come home how successful they might be in that ambition. But, you know, like wrapping it up in ETF wrappers, creating Bitcoin banks, offering yield, you know, it's almost like they want to neuter it a little bit so that they can retain control of it and maybe offer you more fiat products as like a second rail, right? Which maintains their control. So, you know, for me, I kind of reject that positioning of Bitcoin in general. I agree with them that the value of it is going to rise dramatically, right? Because it's priced in dollars, for God's sakes. Like, everything is going to go up against dollars. So that's guaranteed. But, you know, what I don't buy into is that I need anybody's help to secure it. And I think this is not just number go up technology. It's freedom technology. It means that no one can steal your money. It means that no one can stop you from making a payment and censor you. It makes it easy for you to take your wealth across borders. So, if you've got a maniacal government trying to rinse you, then you have some method of escape. So, yeah, I'm not a big fan of the whole Bitcoin bank idea. There's been a few ideas that sailors had that I'm not a big fan of. Like I wasn't a big fan of the decentralized IDs idea that he wanted to put on the Bitcoin blockchain either, because as a sort of freedom-minded individual, I don't really dispute his claim that a decentralized ID might be better than a centralized one because I own it and have more control over it. But I think what a lot of these people don't understand is that I reject the idea that I should have to show you my papers in order to do anything because I want my freedom. So what if I don't want to show an ID at all? Because you're still going to have centralized institutions like the DMV or whoever issuing licenses and deciding who's allowed to do what. I mean, in the UK now, I can't even go fishing in a stream or buy raw milk without asking the government's permission. I mean, I don't know if you saw, but now we have to sign up to say that we own a chicken, for God's sake. So, I reject quite a few of these ideas, right? Like Michael Saylor, he's doing his thing, successful man, has promoted Bitcoin really well. But as far as I'm concerned, he can take the idea of a Bitcoin bank and he can take his idea of a decentralized ID and he can swivel. He can shove it where the sun doesn't shine and he can swivel. Which is to say, thank you, interesting product, but it's probably not for me. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. I think the one thing, Rick, I think I've shared with you offline where I sympathize with Saylor has been, he works in the public markets, heavily regulated, and for him to come out and just call Bitcoin money and say the dollar's going to zero, it's a much more delicate position that he has than us. And I suspect I would be much more careful in his shoes. But I think, promoting MicroStrategy as a future Bitcoin bank sort of negates any of those comments that I made because it's like, no, he's not just saying this anymore. He's planning on doing this. And my biggest concern is that if banks continue to exist like Saylor on a Bitcoin standard, it will win in the free market, not because it's the best, or at least for some period of time, not because it's the best product, but because it's what people have historically known. And so they'll gravitate to what's most familiar and will end up with a very suboptimal Bitcoin use case in the real world. Now, I think for most of us who are doing what we're doing in self-custody, view it as money, view it as freedom money, aren't chasing yield, I think we'll benefit from that. But unfortunately, I think a lot of people will pay the price or at least not fail to experience the level of freedom that we sort of envision.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to ring Michael Saylor to ask his permission when I want to make a payment. I mean, can you imagine? You have to pick up the phone and you end up in some call line, right? And it's like, hi, welcome to the Bitcoin Bank. If your wife has a boyfriend, please press one.
Beep.
Like what? I thought we weren't asking for permission anymore, guys. What the hell is going on? So, yeah, okay, Bitcoin banks, not a good idea, I don't think.
What if she has a girlfriend?
Well, we could negotiate maybe, yeah.
Alrighty. Next topic. Tony, we've got quantum computer cracks military-grade encryption. This is at cybernews.com. If you actually look, what it they seem to have broken like a subcomponent of AES, which this is it's been a long time since I took an encryption class, so it's been a while. But basically, this is one of those common fears that people have in Bitcoin is what's quantum computing going to do? Tony, is this sort of development something that you're concerned about?
With regards to Bitcoin, no, not really. But I mean, this challenge has been ongoing for many years. I mean, there's always going to be someone out there that wants to break something, and just to prove, if anything, just to prove a point. And this is technology. I mean, these types of situations, they keep pushing us to improve and to upgrade and to fine-tune in order to, improve what we have. Whether they break it or not, I didn't look deeply into this specific case. I don't know if they've provided any proof of doing that other than just, claiming that they did. But I mean, at some point, if nothing is done, somebody will manage to, crack something. Which is why it's important to stay on top of these events to make sure, that, the tools that are available for bad are also, used on the good side to prevent them. With regards to the Bitcoin, no, I'm not really concerned. There's a lot more people involved, specifically looking at these things, that have shed, a lot more intelligent detail as to why, one, this is not possible today and is still a far, far ways off from being possible. And by then, I'm almost 100% certain that the code would have been adjusted, upgraded, you know, to protect against this type of attack. And keep in mind, you know, like now that Bitcoin is also becoming, you know, important at a nation state level, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, there are laws issued by, you know, collectively, globally, that, you know, anyone attempting to screw around with the Bitcoin network on any level will go to jail or something. Something, you know, be committing like a high level federal crime. So to decentivize these things. I mean, it'll never stop a hobbyist from trying to do something, but, you know, at the same time, it'll disincentivize a lot of stupid people from just being stupid. I'm not really concerned about this. I'm sure there's a lot of eyes, you know, on this network, you know, making it their top priority that, you know, it's always going to be robust and resistant to this type of attack.
Yeah. Rick, you have anything you want to add to that?
Well, I mean, I'm no expert in quantum computing, right? So I can't get into the nitty gritty of it. But I did find the article really interesting, right, as I read through it, because there was a few inconsistencies in it that I think might reveal a little bit about how worried we should really be. So early on in the article, it states that, you know, this company D-Wave Systems or whoever, you know, researchers using their tools had breached, you know, this standard encryption. But then only a few sentences later, it says there's a quote from one of the researchers that says cracking the code was closer than ever before. So the obvious question is, well, which is it? Did you crack the code or you're close to cracking the code? Because those two things are not the same. So, you know, maybe it's a bit clickbaity that they're saying that they've breached this encryption. Because the truth is, if they had, that's a really big problem, right? Like, you know, it secures everything, like airlines, all the banks, you know, My gut tells me that probably they're doing some fascinating research, but actually breaking these things, I think they're probably not there yet. I mean, it even goes on to say it might take a few more years, right? What's interesting is a little bit of perspective, you know, since like, well, I don't know, 2015 onwards, this idea that quantum computing is suddenly going to kill Bitcoin is a kind of a story that just kind of resurfaces every few years. It comes out again, and people start talking about it. And then, you know, in this article, they go on and they said, oh, what's your method? And then, you know, oh, we can't reveal our method because it's sensitive. Well, you know, that's plausible, but it's also quite easy to hide behind. And, you know, as Bitcoiners, we never want to trust, right? We want to verify. So if someone says to me, oh, I've broken this code, Rick, and I say, oh, great, show me how you did it, and they won't, then I guess I don't find that really, like, super compelling. And then the real giveaway for me was towards the bottom of the article where it says, like, D-Wave are the first commercial suppliers of quantum computers. And then, you know, look, as a marketeer, things started to fall into place. I was like, oh, okay, a PR company wrote this, right? Like, they are trying to promote D-Wave Systems as a supplier of quantum computers. And to suggest that they can break encryption and do all these powerful things is a great way to get some coverage and get themselves in the news. So I think it's probably overinflated. And I think, like Tony says, I mean, again, this is I'd be way out of my depth with these sorts of technologies, but, you know, technology kind of works a bit like an arms race, right? Like, you know, if quantum computers are available to people trying to break encryption, then, you know, the same technologies are going to be available to people who try and strengthen encryption. I think at the bottom of the article, I think it really sort of underlined this. It said the National Institute of Standards and Technology, NIST, apparently, just recently, they released some principal encryption algorithms that are designed to withstand quantum computers. So that kind of suggests that it's not going to be like encryption has to stay still while quantum computers run ahead. You know, these things are probably going to do this, right? And constantly evolve and upgrade, which means that, well, like Tony says, I don't think you should be panicking if you're into Bitcoin, but it does maybe suggest that, hey, look, you know, it's not a set it and forget it situation. Technology changes, you've got to stay up to date. When hardware and software changes, you need to keep up, otherwise you might leave yourself exposed. And that's why it pays to sort of either learn a lot more about cybersecurity and keep up to date, or work with people like us at the Bitcoin Way, where, you know, there's a team of experts who can sort of guide you through it and keep you safe.
Well said. Tony, so I want to pass the mic back to you for a moment. You're down in Panama on doing some work. Could you, why don't you first explain to anyone listening what it is that we do when it comes to this residency, the citizenship program, and then maybe, you know, what exactly you're doing, who you've been with, and love for people to hear the story.
Yeah, of course. I mean, we're constantly exploring jurisdictions, you know, that are Bitcoin and freedom friendly, that, you know, that value you as a human being and protect your rights and essentially leave you alone to live your life the way you want. You know, as long as you're not doing anything, you know, retarded, no one's going to come knocking on your door asking you 100 questions. And so we're constantly exploring, you know, these different jurisdictions. Right now we're in Panama. It's a beautiful country. There's a lot of misconceptions. You know, when you mention Panama to a lot of folks, they automatically got a certain, you know, vision and idea in their head, which is often, you know, very far from the reality of the place. I mean, I'm also guilty of this, and that quickly disappeared on my first trip here. It's a beautiful country, friendly people. They have no central bank, they have no army. So, you know, on that sense, you know, it's very, very positive. A lot of Bitcoiners are here. There's a massive expat community that's currently in the area as well. So if you want to meet other like-minded individuals, it's very easy. We're here with some folks, you know, that we've onboarded, that want to come to Panama, you know, interested in a residency plan here. And they were blown away, but, you know, by one, what they saw here, and by two, how well we have streamlined the whole process to make it easy. I mean, we're here constantly working. We've developed a strong network of resources here, whether it's a legal team or other folks that help expedite, you know, a lot of the red tape and involved in this process. We handle all of it. We meet everyone in person here to make sure that they're not left to their own devices. And it's a great, great opportunity for others to meet, you know, other Bitcoiners, because, you know, that seems to be like the number one complaint, that I don't have any Bitcoiners to speak to in my immediate inner circle. Well, you know, everybody that came down here just made new friends and like truly built some solid foundations to some really long lasting friendships, at least from what I saw. And yeah, man, I mean, we're constantly on the lookout. This falls in line under our self-sovereignty umbrella. This part of our services are always going to be geared to maintaining your financial freedom and, you know, your freedom in general. So step one, you know, we focus on protecting your money, which is Bitcoin in full self-custody. You cannot have freedom money if you're still dependent on a bank or fiat money. That rubbish you must completely, you know, exclude from your life, or as much as possible. Then you have to look for a place that respects you, you know, and doesn't coerce you or make you feel guilty because you want to preserve your privacy. You know, there's no one that has the right to do this. I don't know who these people are that, you know, these psychopaths that genuinely believe they have the right to dictate how we think, breathe, and eat. You know, to Bitcoin was created to give all of these guys the finger and to tell them, no, we don't want your product. You've been lying to us for all this time. Now we have something to give you the finger. You keep your product. We're moving somewhere else. We don't need you. We don't want you. We're not going to listen to you. And, you know, you put your money where your mouth is and you move, you vote with your time and energy. And that's it. Whether it's Panama or other places, which we'll eventually also be looking at and exploring. At the end of the day, people want to be left alone to live the lives they choose, not those dictated by a bunch of Looney Tunes.
I love it. Sounds like a lot of fun. I need to get down there. And next time you go down, maybe I need to do a little family vacation.
Absolutely,
to Panama.
Man.
Awesome. Well, guys, thank you so much for taking the time today. For everyone listening, we've got obviously Plan B residency to citizenship programs. We help with online privacy. We set up privacy phones. And of course, our very favorite, Bitcoin in 100% proper self-custody. So check out the bitcoinway.com/podcast. I'd love to schedule some time to chat with you, explain our services, and see if we can help in any way. So guys, thanks again, and look forward to catching up again in a few days.
Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Cheers, guys.